Alrighty. Good morning again. As Walter alluded to earlier, we're going through the books of the Bible, and we're up to this point, which I am going to the, as I'll explain at length, traditional Jewish naming, which is just Kings. And in our Bibles, it's two books, 1st and 2nd Kings. Well, I'll explain plenty why I've made that distinction. See if you recognize what the scenes are in some of these pictures. So this one is where Elisha explains to his young servant that don't fear, there's these chariots of fire all around you that you know, or God's army or something like that, that will bring the victory. So it's not just about kings, right? So there's a lot of kings. That is kind of the point, but there's more than just that in the book. So like I said, our Bibles have two books, 1 Kings and 2 Kings. But in ancient times, the Jews just had a single book called Kings. And why they split them, like we said before, is just because they ran out of paper. The Greek translation, I think specifically, just only had so much room on a scroll, and so they split it. When we talked about Samuel last 2 weeks, I felt that was a pretty logical split between 1 and 2 Samuel. Saul dies at the end of 1 Samuel, and David begins reigning at the beginning of 2 Samuel. Makes a lot of sense. The split between 1 and 2 Kings really does not make any sense whatsoever. There's not really any logic. That's a big part of why I'm combining this as a single book for this lesson. or going back to the combining of them. So if you were to look at this, at the very end of 1 Kings, it has like three verses, the last chapter of 1 Kings. I've lost it. Well, anyway, was it Ahaziah, I think, so the 1 Kings 22:51, toward the very end of the book, Ahaziah, the son of Ahab, began to reign over Israel and Samaria, and goes on. So it's like, okay, clearly we're just starting, to talk about this man. You know, he just began to reign, and then, you know, three verses later, bam, that's the end of 1 Kings. And then you go over to, 2 Kings, chapter 1, verse 1, that Moab rebelled against Israel after the death of Ahab, and Ahaziah fell down through a lattice, and it just continues on the story about Ahaziah. There's just no reason to split it right there. They just ran out of paper. So don't look, I don't see any profound meaning as to why it's split there. I'm really convinced there's not. So don't get too caught up in that, and that's why, again, I'm just putting this into one. I think there would have been a lot of good places to do the break. A couple chapters later, Elijah dies and Elisha takes over as kind of the big prophet in the area. That would have been a good spot. Even just backing up three verses to the beginning of Ahaziah would have been a good place to split it. But no, it's none of that. It's just right there in the middle. So, okay. All right, I'm gonna be using the laser pointer a bit today. So, our Bible timeline, I put an arrow, but it's really that whole, I don't know how well this works at an angle. This whole, where am I? Okay. Section here, between David and the exile is the book of 1 and 2 Kings or Kings. So I'm gonna zoom in on that. And so again, this is the timeline that's a zooming in of just this little section on the big timeline. And so, in the books of Kings, of 1 and 2 Kings, I'll go back and forth. This is the big things that happen. So red and blue makes purple. Good. Okay. The kingdom splits. That's the big thing to me toward the beginning of the books. Kingdom of Israel splits into a north and a south. And so the north has 10 tribes. The south has, I'll say, two. I'm going to go on at length about that later. But for now, two, Judah and Benjamin in the south. 10 plus 2 equals 12. There was 12 tribes to start with, right? So at the beginning, you have Solomon reigns over the 12 tribes as one big kingdom, right? And then, again, red and purple makes blue, red and blue makes purple. Yeah, let me get that right. So it splits. I gave red to Israel. I think I swapped colors later. I don't know. Sorry, I should have been consistent. Anyway, yeah, so there's a big section here where you get stories about the 20 kings of Israel. They're all terrible. And then simultaneously, you go back and forth between stories about Israel and Judah. Judah's the southern tribes, southern kingdom after the split. There's 19 kings, and there's a queen. So I get it. When a king's married, there's a queen, but I mean a queen ruler. There was not a king ruler at the time that Queen Athaliah was ruling. That's why she's singled out as the queen. I call her queen regent. I don't know if I think I'm using that word right, but anyway. So again, the split of the two books is not one book's about Judah and one's about Israel. It's just they go back and forth in the stories, and the book splits kind of somewhere in the middle there. And there's no real rhyme or reason here, right? There's a lot of back and forth in these two books. And then at some point, Israel gets taken captive by Assyria and basically just dissolves. And that's just the end of the, when I say Israel, I'm going to again explain this at length. That's the north, the northern split gets captured and goes with Assyria. They do whatever they want. And then Judah kind of marches on alone for a little bit there, where, you know, it's just they're the only Jewish kingdom. Some of you apparently grew up incessantly hearing about the 17 Bible time periods. I only learned about this like 7 or 8 years ago, so this is still new to me, but one of them is Judah alone. You're supposed to know this. Everyone knows this, I guess. I didn't. You had the United Kingdom, right? The divided kingdom, and then Judah alone. So that's kind of where we're at. If you know that, you're already way ahead of me. But okay. So again, if you're taking notes, like I force my kids to do, the summary really is just a lot of kings, the kings of the Jews, and there's also prophets. Mostly focus on Elijah and Elisha, but there are others, like Isaiah mentioned toward the end, and there's others that come in and out through this time. Again, if you're trying to name the scene, right, Queen of Sheba comes to visit Solomon. That's what I'm going for here. Okay. All right, I brought this guy back. Everyone loved this guy with the guy that's so indifferent to the prophet. This is one of my favorites, so I had to bring him back. why is this book special? And it's all about failure. So it was Judges, I guess, but in a different way. So this covers, I'd say, about 385 years of different kings. Again, some of the reigns are happening simultaneously. So you got the 20 kings of the north. They're all proclaimed as being terrible. Kings of Judah, some are terrible, some are okay, some are exceptional. And through this time, God sent prophets, and God makes a point about how he sent prophets to try to get them back in line in both kingdoms, and very few people ever listened. And so in the end, both nations end up conquered. Judah by the Babylonians, and they do end up returning Israel meaning the north, the northern kingdom, conquered by Assyria, really kind of returns or gets assimilated with some foreign gods. It's messy. They don't really come back to power or anything. Sometimes they get absorbed into Judah and then kind of fade away. They don't really come back. Our main characters, King Solomon is the first 11 chapters. I don't know, it's interesting he's not put in one of the other books, right? I mean, you'd think Kings would just be about the split kingdom, but it starts with Solomon over the United Kingdom. It's David's son, right? And I think most people know about him. He was very rich, he was very wise, and he really ruined his life, especially with having many wives. Is it 700, I think? 300 concubines, or is it vice versa? A lot, right? Next main character, if you will, is 39 kings and the queen regent. Yes, I actually did the crown symbol 39 times on the screen. And it's combined, Judah or Israel. Not and. Either one or the other they were ruling over. Solomon's the only one that ruled over both in this book. And then you got Elijah and Elisha as the prophets, that I would say are the main characters in these books or this book. So we kind of, this kind of matches with that red and blue and purple timeline I already put up there. But the outline, first 11 chapters is Solomon and his reign. Again, the kingdom's still unified then. And then, well, let me skip to the end. The last section is only, what is that, 8 chapters on Judah alone. And then the huge middle is most of the thing, where it's just stories going back and forth between, you know, a king in Judah did this, a king in Israel did this, a king in Judah did this, a king in Israel did this. Every once in a while, they'll intersect. But mostly that's what you're going to see in this book, is just back and forth between the two kingdoms. If you're like me, I did not grow up really having a clue that Israel ever split up. And I was well into adulthood when I really first read 1st and 2nd Kings. And I'm like, what is going on? I'm like, I'm a little confused, of course, missing the whole, like, split thing. I'm like, there's two kingdoms going on here, isn't there? So if you're like me, this may be a little bit new information, so... I mean, not now, it's not new to me, but it was at a time all too recently. So why did, God let the people, go into exile at the end? So that was the ultimate punishment, right? So they have their kingdoms for a while. Israel, the northern kingdom, kind of makes you wonder why he suffered with them so long. And he sent some really good prophets, like Elijah, to them. But in the end, they were thrown into exile, and then 100-ish years later, so was Judah. So why did God do that? And because that was the promise. God made this clear in Leviticus and Deuteronomy. And I'll just read it off the screen for time's sake, because we'll get to a story after this. But, you know, he clearly knew the future, and he knew that they would disobey. And he said, if you disobey, I will destroy you, even though you're my people. So Leviticus 26 and pieces of verse 27 and 33, it says, but if in spite of this, so he's giving multiple warnings. He's like, you need to obey me. If not, I'll send some plagues. And this is what's going to happen. He's like, and then if you still don't listen, he says, if in spite of this, you will not listen to me, but walk contrary to me, verse 33, I will scatter you among the nations. That's the end right there, right? Deuteronomy 28, pretty similar kind of warning, starting verse 15. But if you will not obey the voice of the Lord your God, or be careful to do all his commandments and statutes that I command you this day, today, verse 64, he says a lot of things. if you notice the gap there, right? There's like 51, or 50 odd verses, 49 verses, between those two, because he says a lot of things that are going to be punishment for if you don't obey. Verse 64. The Lord will scatter you among all peoples from one end of the earth to the other. I'm trying to think. That's wrong. 2 Kings. I wrote 1 Kings. 2 Kings 17. We were chapter 11 of 1 Kings for the scripture reading. I was trying to remember what I put there. If you look at 2 Kings, I want to read this because this is important. So again, typo, it's supposed to say 2 Kings 17, 6 through 23. and it's a long reading, but it's really critical. I'm just getting my bearings here. Yeah, okay, there it is. So, verse 5 is a blink and you miss it sort of thing. So 2 Kings 17 and verse 5, then the king of Assyria came up throughout all the land and went up to Samaria and besieged it 3 years. I'm drawing a blank on the exact verse of where it says they're taken away. Anyway, let's just read the reading. I'm sorry, I'm out of sorts there. Headings are different in the Bible I studied out of. Anyway, sorry. 2 Kings 17, starting verse 6. So this is just explaining why God is punishing them this way. In the ninth year of Hoshea, the king of Assyria... in the ninth year of Hoshea, that's the king of the north of the Jews. The king of Assyria took Samaria and carried Israel away into Assyria. And place them in Hala and Habor by the river of Gozan and in the cities of the Medes. So I think that's the verse. So that's the end of Israel. And it's just like a single verse, you know, like, and they were taken captive. But what follows after this is this long explanation of why God did this. Verse 7, for so it was that the children of Israel had sinned against the Lord their God, which had brought them out of the land of Egypt from under the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and feared other gods, and walked in the statutes of the heathen, whom the Lord cast out from before the children of Israel and of the kings of Israel, which they had made. And the children of Israel did secretly those things which were that were not right against the Lord their God, and they built them high places in all their cities, and that usually implies a place to worship an idol, the high places. From the tower of the watchman to the fence city, and they set them up images and groves in every high hill and under every green tree, and there they burnt incense in all the high places, as did the heathen whom the Lord carried away before them and wrought wicked things to provoke the Lord to anger. So it's just this whole laundry list of all the bad things that they've been doing. Verse 12, for they served idols, whereof the Lord had said unto them, you shall not do this thing. Yet the Lord testified against Israel and against Judah by all the prophets and by all the seers, saying, turn ye from your evil ways. So I sent you prophets to try. I didn't just like throw you away. I gave you another chance. I sent you prophets to try to make you listen, right? Turn ye from your evil ways and keep my commandments and my statutes according to all the law which I commanded your fathers, in which I sent to you by my servants the prophets. Notwithstanding, they would not hear, but harden their necks like to the neck of their fathers that did not believe in the Lord their God. And they rejected his statutes and his covenant that he made with their fathers and his testimonies which he testified against them. And they followed vanity and became vain and went after the heathen that were round about them, concerning whom the Lord had charged them that they should not do like them. And they left all the commandments of the Lord their God and made them molten images, even two calves. We'll talk about that story later. And made a grove and worshipped all the host of heaven and served Baal. And they caused their sons and their daughters to pass through the fire and used divination and enchantments and sold themselves to do evil in the sight of the Lord to provoke him to anger. Therefore the Lord was very angry with Israel and removed them out of his sight. There was none left but the tribe of Judah only. So again, kind of recapping, this was the punishment, to just get rid of Israel. After all of that, they just wouldn't listen. So they're, you know, eliminated. 19, also Judah kept not the commandments of the Lord their God, but walked in the statutes of Israel, which they made. So instead of being a good example, they followed after the bad example of the north. 20, and the Lord rejected all the seed of Israel and afflicted them and delivered them into the hands of spoilers until he had cast them out of his sight. For he rent Israel from the house of David, and they made Jeroboam the son of Nebat king, and Jeroboam drave Israel from following the Lord and made them sin a great sin. For the children of Israel walked in all the sins of Jeroboam, which he did, they departed not from them. So the northerners certainly could follow an example. They stuck with it for hundreds of years. They just followed a bad example. Verse 23, until the Lord removed Israel out of his sight, as he had said, by all his servants, the prophets. So in other words, we've warned you. So Israel was carried away out of their own land to Assyria unto this day. Again, that's really good kind of summary of all of that, I warned you and I said this was going to happen and it did. And it's exactly because you wouldn't listen and you would not obey. But as a silver lining, he does promise, Deuteronomy 30, for example, this is quoting verse 3, that God will gather you again from all the peoples where the Lord your God has scattered you. So he does promise them to return if they will repent and turn back. Judah takes them up on that. All right, so again, if you're taking notes, just a recap on this first half. The book is certainly about a lot of kings and some prophets, which may be a more subtle point because you just assume that prophets are abundant throughout the Old Testament, and it's notable that they're actually not. The prophets really come up only in the time of the kings, and the time of the exile. But other than that, I mean, Samuel was a prophet. I mean, I think even people like David are considered a prophet, but they weren't, you know, they were prophets who were also leaders and doing good at both things. Whereas in the time of kings, you have kings who are doing terrible things. They're the leaders. And the prophets are not the leaders, but they're sent to tell the kings, you're not doing right. And so it's a bit of a shift. so again, you see the repeated failures of both kingdoms. We talked about the main characters, Solomon, 39 kings, and then one queen regent, and then Elijah and Elisha, and the outline of the book. So go ahead and move on to the big story. So 1 Kings, I have that right this time, 1 Kings chapter 12, and this is... probably the most important thing to remember to me, if you have to remember one story, as far as historical timelines, this chapter is the big one, which kind of signifies the split of the kingdom. our scripture reading, Walter read, a big part of chapter 11, which of course is the chapter before this. And, you see, the backstory of Jeroboam. So we'll read about, Jeroboam starts an uprising and he's the one that, leads the, the nation that runs away. His backstory starts in chapter 11, that he had a grudge against Solomon. I think that's kind of interesting. Just want to make sure I didn't accidentally skip a slide. The summary of the story, again, Israel splits up. So we've only had three kings, over a united Israel: Saul, David, and Solomon. And, that's all they can handle, I guess. And, they split apart. They lasted together about 113 years, right? So David didn't rule over the whole kingdom until 7 years in. But each king reigned 40 years total. So you do the math, that's about 113 years, give or take. And, that was it. And then they split apart. Say, wow, 113 years, that's it. Our country didn't do much better. this sounds a little familiar. Hopefully you're aware that, our country had a split, a while back, in the 1860s. And, as you think about that, you know, our country, I mean, if you go back to 1776, okay, it's about 90 years, but, you know, the country didn't really like even have a, you know, a president until like, what, 1793 or something like that, right? So, our country lasted only about 70 years before, the south of our country, seceded. I hope that's not too big of a word, right? Secession, right? Some part of the country, decides they don't want to be part of the country anymore and they go start their own country, or just somehow be independent. And, in Israel, the north breaks away, right? In our country, in the U.S., the south broke away. But otherwise, very similar kind of idea, if that helps, kind of get the idea of what's going on here, is that some chunk of states, decided to band together and start their own country, the Confederacy. And in Israel, it's not states, it's tribes, but same basic idea, regions. And they decide to band together and start their own country. Let's see, I'm trying to think. I don't know if I'll get to this later. What's very strange, though, is that in our country, and in any other country that splits up, you've got one group that decides to leave, and they come up with a new name for their country. And so in our history, there was the United States, and then the South decided to leave, and they called themselves the Confederacy. And, other places, have done this, right? Like, part of Sudan split off a little while back, and they call themselves South Sudan. Okay? And the country that stuck around stayed Sudan, you know. In Israel, this gets very confusing. Israel, was the whole nation, and then the north splits off. The north is the one that split off, and they keep the name Israel. That's really backwards, right? Like, normally the people that split off have to come up with a new name. But they actually took the name Israel with them, and the south, which is one that had Jerusalem and had the temple and was the, you know, the capital, had the capital and everything, the south came up with a new name, called itself Judah. It's odd, but I bring it up because you really have to think hard when you're reading through 1st and 2nd Kings. When, after chapter 11, when it says Israel, that means the north. It doesn't mean the whole country anymore. So it's just very hard for me sometimes to keep track of, and I'll forget, one or the other. A lot of times when people teach through this, they'll just call it the Northern Kingdom and the Southern Kingdom, just to make it, you know, an obvious distinction. But the Bible's not going to do that. And so if you're reading the Bible, you really need to know what's meant by Israel, as you're going through that. So, Okay. Why is the story special? Well, I'm sure a lot of reasons, but the one I picked is the two sides never reunite. So in our country, at least, we came back together. The South and the North came back as one country. But they never do. The North really just gets dissolved by Assyria. And like I say, there seems to be some territorial gains back as Judah takes back some in the, I think it's called the Hasmonean dynasty or something. This is not in the Bible, but between the time of, before the time of Christ, walking on the earth. He's always been. But yeah, otherwise they never come back together. And so this is not just a temporary split. This is it. They stay split up. And even then they end up being captured and going into exile. So the main characters in the story we're about to read in chapter 12, Rehoboam and Jeroboam, the two kings of each side, one of the north, one of the south. Their names are all too similar to each other, and so you may have to concentrate a bit to keep them straight. I'm going to try to color code them on the next slide, if it helps. Again, I forgot, and I did the colors backwards, but... so Rehoboam is Solomon's son, and so he should be the one that's supposed to rule over all of Israel, but that doesn't even seem to last like a day and at all. And he's immediately challenged in that. So he's really king over only Judah, over the south. And the reason is he's just a total jerk. Jeroboam and others have a reasonable complaint, which is that Solomon was really too harsh. Solomon enacted slave labor. Kings weren't supposed to do that. Solomon was too harsh. And so they're like, Rehoboam, can you kind of ease up on us? And we'll read in the story, the wise elders say to him, yeah, that's a good idea. You should ease up. And Rehoboam says, nope, gonna be mean. So you've got Jeroboam. Like I said, he's got the backstory a bit. He had rebelled against Solomon and had to go into his own little exile. And as soon as he heard that Solomon was dead, he came back to start trouble again. So he becomes the king of Israel. Which Israel? The northern tribes of Israel, not the whole kingdom. He's the one that rebels against Rehoboam. He leads them to idolatry. That's a big part of the story. So, all right. So I'll put the outline up. Again, I tried to color code them. This outline goes pretty neatly back and forth between north, south. Well, I should do this the right way. South, north, south, north, south, north, south, north. That's the idea. So let's go ahead and read chapter 12 of 1 Kings. And Rehoboam went to Shechem, for all Israel will come to Shechem to make him king, not Jerusalem. He went to Shechem. David ruled in Jerusalem, and he'll eventually go back to Jerusalem, but keep in mind, he's not there. And it came to pass, when Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who was yet in Egypt, heard of it, that was our scripture reading earlier, for he was fled from the presence of King Solomon, and Jeroboam dwelt in Egypt, that they sent and called him, and Jeroboam and all the congregation of Israel came and spake to Rehoboam, saying, thy father made our yoke grievous. Now therefore make thou the grievous service of thy father and his heavy yoke, which he put upon us, lighter, and we will serve thee. And he said unto them, I'll think about it, basically. Depart ye for 3 days, depart yet for 3 days, then come again to me. And the people departed. And King Rehoboam consulted with the old men, or elders, that stood before Solomon his father while he yet lived, and said, how do ye advise that I may answer this people? And they spake unto him, saying, if thou wilt be a servant, you know, basically take his advice, if thou wilt be a servant unto the people this day, and wilt serve them, and answer them, and speak good words to them, then they will be thy servants forever. So be nice to them, and they'll be nice to you. This is the elders' advice. But he forsook the counsel of the old men, verse 8, which they had given him, and consulted with the young men that were grown up with him, and which stood before him. So he brought his friends in and asked them, Verse 9, and he said unto them, what counsel give ye that we may answer this people who have spoken to me, saying, make the yoke which thy father did put upon us lighter? Verse 10, and the young men that were grown up with him spake unto him, saying, thus shalt thou speak unto this people that spake unto thee, saying, thy father made our yoke heavy, but make thou it lighter unto us. Thus shalt thou say unto them, my little finger shall be thicker than my father's loins, and now whereas my father did laid you with a heavy yoke, I will add to your yoke. My father chastised you with whips, but I will chastise you with scorpions. So he's doubling down and being all tough about it. Verse 12, so Jeroboam and all the people came to Rehoboam the third day, as the king appointed, saying, come to me again the third day. Verse 13, and the king answered the people roughly, and forsook the old men's counsel that they gave him, and spake to them after the counsel of the young men, saying, my father has made your yoke heavy, and I will add to your yoke. My father also chastised you with whips, but I will chastise you with scorpions. Wherefore the king hearkened not unto the people, for the cause was from the Lord, that he might perform his saying. So this was a prophecy of God because of Solomon's sins, that the split would happen. That he might perform his saying which the Lord spake by Ahijah the Shilonite unto Jeroboam the son of Nebat. So again, that was part of our reading. Verse 16, so when all Israel saw that the king hearkened not unto them, the people answered the king, saying, what portion have we in David? Meaning, why should we stick around here? Neither have we inheritance in the son of Jesse to your tents, O Israel. Now see to thine own house, David. So Israel departed unto their tents, but as for the children of Israel, which dwelt in the cities of Judah, Rehoboam reigned over them. So that's the Israel as a whole, saying if they lived in the south, Rehoboam was their king. Verse 18, then King Rehoboam sent Adoram, who was over the tribute, and all Israel stoned him with stones, that he died. So they killed the messenger. Therefore, King Rehoboam made speed to get him up to his chariot to flee to Jerusalem. So again, remember, he wasn't in Jerusalem for this coronation that was supposed to happen. He's actually up in what will end up being Israel's territory. So he's like, they're going to kill me. And so he flees back to safety, to his Jerusalem. Verse 20, it came to pass, when all Israel heard that Jeroboam was come again, that they sent and called him unto the congregation, and made him king over all Israel. There was none that followed the house of David, but the tribe of Judah only. And when Rehoboam was come to Jerusalem, he assembled all the house of Judah with the tribe of Benjamin, 180,000 chosen men, or 180,000, which were warriors to fight against the house of Israel, to bring the kingdom again to Rehoboam, son of Solomon. So they're like, well, if we can't do this peacefully, let's just have a war so we can have the kingdom reunited, or at least under our control. Verse 22, but the word of God came to Shemaiah, the man of God, saying, speak unto Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, king of Judah, and unto all the house of Judah and Benjamin, and to the remnant of the people, saying, thus saith the Lord, you shall not go up, nor fight against your brethren, the children of Israel. Return every man to his house, for this thing is for me. They hearken therefore to the word of the Lord, and return to depart according to the word of the Lord. So they wanted to fight. God said, no, nope, stand down, just accept it. I want the split. Verse 25, then Jeroboam built Shechem in Mount Ephraim. Of course, there's already a Shechem, so he built it up, I think is the idea. And dwelt therein, and went out from thence, and built Penuel. And Jeroboam said in his heart, now shall the kingdom return to the house of David, if this people, so he's afraid, they might actually go, you know, do right and worship in Jerusalem, right? Verse 27, if this people go up to do sacrifice in the house of the Lord at Jerusalem, then shall the heart of this people turn again unto their Lord, even unto Rehoboam, king of Judah, and they shall kill me and go again to Rehoboam, king of Judah. Whereupon the king took counsel and made two calves of gold and said unto them, it is too much for you to go up to Jerusalem. Behold thy gods, O Israel, which brought thee up out of the land of Egypt. And he set the one in Bethel, and the other he put in Dan. So he's like, no need to go to Jerusalem, to foreign territory, to do your religious thing. I'll just make some golden calves for you to worship. And the people of Israel said, oh, okay, that's fine. So verse 30, and this thing became a sin, for the people went to worship before the one, even unto Dan. And he made an house of high places and made priests of the lowest of the people, which are not of the sons of Levi. So he kind of invents his own priestly system. Verse 32, when Jeroboam ordained a feast in the 8th month on the 15th day of the month, like unto the feast that is in Judah, which I think is in the 7th month. And he offered upon the altar, so did he in Bethel, sacrificing unto the calves that he had made. And he placed in Bethel the priests of the high places which he had made. So he offered upon the altar which he had made in Bethel the 15th day of the 8th month, even in the month which he had devised of his own heart, and ordained a feast unto the children of Israel. And he offered upon the altar and burnt incense. So he's kind of just completely set up his own little system of religion that looks a lot like Israel's. There's a feast, a yearly feast, but he's like, we're going to do it on this month, not what they do in Judah. And just really cemented, the sinful, worship. So. All right. So some details, I thought were interesting. We talked about this last week. This is not the first time the North secedes. So this is actually right at the beginning of David's reign, or let's just say right after Saul dies, 2 Samuel chapter 2. David's supposed to become king of the whole land, but that's not what happens. There's an uprising. Saul's son Ishbosheth decides he wants to be king over the north, which is described as king over Gilead, and over the Asherites, and over Jezreel, and over Ephraim, and over Benjamin, and over all Israel. Curious phrase, all Israel, because it's not including Judah, even then. This is a while back, remember. We're doing a little, what is this? A little prequel or something. A flashback. So there was a split even then. And so David was ruling Judah only for the first 7 years, and then he gets the whole kingdom after a battle. But I think that's kind of interesting. All right, and like I said, I was finally going to come back to this. So there's 12 tribes total. We know that from Sunday school maps and things like this. Jeroboam was promised 10 tribes. That number is specifically stated in places like 1 Kings 11:35. And so that should leave 2, right? 12 minus 10, that makes 2. Rehoboam should have only 2. But it's described often that he is the king over Judah only. So verse 20 of what we just read, there was none that followed the house of David, but the tribe of Judah only. Well, that's 1. That's not 2. So what is going on there? So a few verses later, if you noticed, verse 23, I'll just read the whole thing. Speak unto Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, king of Judah, and unto all the house of Judah and Benjamin, and to the remnant of the people, saying. So it seems that when you say king of Judah, it means Judah and Benjamin. If you look at the map there, Benjamin, I had to label it because it wasn't labeled on the map for some reason, but Benjamin's the blue one there, right at the borderline between north and the south. And so it seems that Benjamin is included when you say Judah. It's kind of interesting because, I think it was the last slide, when Saul's son had the secession, he had Benjamin, which makes sense because he's from Benjamin. But at the time of this split, it seems that Benjamin's included with Judah. What confuses me, though, is that when you look at these maps, they put Simeon kind of just lumped in with Judah. And so there's a third tribe. So I don't pretend to know all of how the tribal maps work and everything like that. And how does Simeon fit in with the 10 tribes? Maybe if you know, maybe afterward you can tell me. But these are the things I've tried to wrestle with over the years. But the text highlights Judah and Benjamin. And it's only the maps that really point out Simeon. So I have to kind of, I guess, assume Simeon moved or something, or I don't know, somehow relocated, but that happened with Dan. Dan ends up relocating to a city in the north, so maybe Simeon did also, we don't really know about it. I don't know. but for simplicity, Judah and Benjamin is the south. Okay. All right. It's kind of lessons to learn from this. Listen to your elders. So that's what Rehoboam should have done. It did have to, I say it didn't have to end this way. It did because it was prophesied. But you know what I mean? He should have listened to the advice of the first people he talked to, which is the old men or the elders. Their advice was to not do all this, and it's the young men that told them to rule with an iron fist. What I think is funny is that there are proverbs that warn against this. Who wrote the proverbs? Solomon. Who's Solomon? Rehoboam's dad? So Rehoboam didn't listen to the advice of his father, who wrote scripture about this. But Proverbs 11 verse 14, where there is no guidance, the people falls, but in an abundance of counselors, there is safety. What kind of counselors? Well, I would say look at Proverbs 16:31. Gray hair, which of course means old age, is a crown of glory and is gained in a righteous life. These are the people you should be listening to. Proverbs 19:20, listen to advice and accept instruction. And Proverbs 24:6, for by wise guidance you can wage your war, and an abundance of counselors there is victory. I think implied there is, as Jesus would say, if you're not prepared to go to war, don't do it. there's wisdom he should have listened to. All right, so again, recap if you're taking notes, stories, of course, about the northern tribes seceding from the unified kingdom. They never do really come back together. Rehoboam and Jeroboam are the two main characters. Excuse me. And like I say, Benjamin is kind of implied as part of Judah. We'll wrap up as we usually do with a poem. I think this is the only poem that I really know of in the entire book of Kings, or 1 and 2 Kings. So 2 Kings 19, 20 through 28. I didn't look to see how exactly similar it is. But it is very nearly similar to Isaiah 37. The story involves Isaiah here. It's not like a coincidence or anything. It's just the same basic story and poem, it seems. So 2 Kings 19, this would be after the north is taken captive. So this story is taking place in Judah, at the time of King Hezekiah, who's a really good king. So Assyria had just conquered kind of recently, I think like 9 years previous, something like that. I don't know, or eight, somewhere in there. But Assyria has conquered, the north, and now they're invading the south also, not conquering, but invading them. And so Hezekiah, of course, is scared, but Isaiah comes to him and says, it's going to be okay. The Lord will save. But Hezekiah prays anyway. Good idea. And so this poem, is, I believe the Lord's reply to it. So 2 Kings 19, 20 through 28. And we'll wrap up there. And then Isaiah, the son of Amoz, sent to Hezekiah saying, thus saith the Lord God of Israel, that which thou hast prayed to me against Sennacherib, king of Assyria, I have heard. This is the word that the Lord hath spoken concerning him. The virgin, the daughter of Zion, hath despised thee and laughed at thee to scorn. The daughter of Jerusalem hath shaken her head at thee. Whom hast thou reproached and blasphemed, and against whom hast thou exalted thy voice and lifted up thine eyes on high, even against the Holy One of Israel? By thy messengers thou hast reproached the Lord, and hast said, with the multitude of my chariots, I am come up to the height of the mountains, to the sides of Lebanon, and will cut down the tall cedar trees thereof, and the choice fir trees thereof, and I will enter into the lodgings of his borders, and into the forest of his Carmel. I have digged and drunk strange waters, and with the sole of my feet I have dried up all the rivers of besieged places. Hast thou not heard long ago how I have done it, and of ancient times that I have formed it? Now I have brought it to pass that thou shouldest be to lay waste fenced cities into ruinous heaps. Therefore their inhabitants were of small power, they were dismayed and confounded, they were as the grass of the field, and as the green herb, as the grass on the housetops, and as corn blasted before it be grown up. But I know thy abode, and thy going out, and thy coming in, and thy rage against me. Because thy rage is against me, and thy tumult is come up to mine ears, therefore I will put my hook in thy nose, and my bridle in thy lips, and I will turn thee back by the way which thou camest. Just a poem of judgment on that enemy nation. But we'll end there. Just extend the invitation. Of course, we see the warnings in this book. Even those that seem to be God's golden child, which is the nation of Israel, is not immune from punishment and needs to obey. And so the same for us. There's none that will escape the judgment on the last day. So if there's any here that need to obey the call of the gospel and get right with God, or ask for prayers of the saints, then this is a good time as we stand and sing the song of invitation.